I understand that just recently the Department of Justice has changed the rule regarding FBI's requirements to record interrogations.
That's correct. As of July 11th, the Department of Justice wide, so that includes FBI, DEA, ATF, and the U.S. Marshals Service, are now recording custodial interrogations when they happen in places of police facilities.
And what does that mean for the right of the person that's being interrogated?
A lot of local police departments have been doing it for years, and it's something that the Department of Justice has found a good time for the Department of Justice agencies to start participating in it. I've always found it to be a very valuable tool. I did it when I was a state investigator down in Georgia, and it was always met with great success. If you think about doing interviews and interrogations as simply collecting testimonial evidence, what we're doing now is just creating a system where we collect that evidence in the most complete and accurate fashion to be able to present in court at a later time.
One of the more recent controversies here in Buffalo has been over the Erie County Sheriff's Department monitoring cell phone surveillance. The sheriff says, Sheriff Howard says, they're not using it to monitor conversations or grab text messages from citizens, but this is an important component used by police agencies. What federal law allows this for the departments?
I'm not sure if there's a federal law that actually allows it, but I believe everything the sheriff's department is doing is likely constitutional. Otherwise, I don't think the sheriff would engage in those activities.
So it's not considered any violation to a citizen's right for them to do this and conduct this?
I'm not sure exactly what they're doing out there, but if there was a constitutional issue, I'm sure that the Department of Justice and the FBI would be looking into it.
Your office also does investigations into public corruption. We've had several past cases here, of course. Buffalo Police Department involving past injury on duty cases that the FBI has been involved in. More recently, investigating alleged police brutality here in Buffalo. We know that some officers have been placed on administrative leave. What can you tell us at this point on these cases and how you will continue to go about investigating this?
Well, I think the injured on duty case is a good example of some of the impact that the investigation has had on the community. Working with Buffalo Police Department, the FBI looked at the number of officers that were on injured on duty status. So injured on duty status means you don't come to work, you collect your salary, and oftentimes it's tax-free or for at least a period that you're injured on duty. There were about 120 people on injured on duty status. So that's 120 officers not coming to work. And in salaries alone, I think the commissioner had mentioned that was upwards of $6 million a year. And then having to pay overtime for the other officers to fill in those gaps in the schedule. And then to not have those backups available for those officers that are out there on the street. So we found a couple people who were really defrauding the system. And they were prosecuted. And the numbers of the officers that are on injured on duty status now are in the high teens, low 20s. And many of those are officers who are legitimately injured on duty. I mean, it is a legitimate program. I think there were just some people that had decided to milk the system a little bit further than they should have.
Tell us, if you can, about the police brutality cases. Those, some have been captured by citizens on cell phone recordings. How does that play into the possible prosecution in these cases?
Well, the FBI has been working civil rights. We actually just hit the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So we've been working civil rights cases for 50 years. It's part of our primary responsibility, one of the responsibilities that falls to the FBI and not many other federal agencies. So we take it very seriously and really encourage people who feel as though that they have been mistreated to the point of a federal investigation to report that to the FBI. There are several different ways that they can do it. They can report it through FBI.gov on the main website. There's a submit a tip. They can call our office. They can call Buffalo Police Department Internal Affairs. But it's important to get that information in the hands of law enforcement so that we can adequately address it. There's been a lot of people who have gone to the media recently. And as you well know, the media protects its sources sometimes, and if people don't want to come forward, you have a lot of allegations and a lot of claims out there, but they can't be backed up or substantiated by any type of investigation. It's important for us to resolve these cases. The commissioner does an outstanding job working with the FBI, sharing information, working on these cases together. so that he can make sure he's got the best officers out on the street.
I want to turn a little bit to terrorism and terrorism issues and the concerns and how you work along with local agencies in our region, given the borders to Canada and any of concerns of domestic terrorism. What do you follow and what do you work with police agencies on right now here in this region?
Well, the Buffalo Division is unique in that we sponsor two joint terrorism task forces, or joint terrorism, JTTFs, one of them in Rochester and one of them in Buffalo. And these JTTFs are a conglomeration of FBI agents and state and local officers from New York State Police, Buffalo Police Department, Rochester Police Department, Amherst. And we all work together, a common goal, trying to protect the United States from terrorist attacks. And a lot of people say, well, there's nothing that people would want to attack here in western New York, but there are great critical infrastructures out here. There's businesses. But not so much the attack itself, but just the fact that the terrorists live everywhere. And they, with the advent of the internet, the ability for somebody to self-radicalize sitting at home watching the computer, and the terrorists use the computer just like any legitimate business would. They raise funds, they recruit individuals, they promote their propaganda. So somebody can self-radicalize themselves anywhere in the United States. And we have those people here in western New York. And when they start to engage in activity that's going to start carrying out, predicating federal cases here, that's when we become involved, trying to stop them again, stop them before they happen. We're not trying to investigate post-event terrorist attacks. We're trying to prevent terrorist attacks from happening.
You also work very hard with the community groups to make sure that the relationships are very good with Muslim community and other relationships with other organizations and international groups here in the Buffalo region. That's probably key and vital, too.
It is. Just last week we had an incident, and I don't want to disclose the location, but we had a threat that was received on FBI.gov, went to FBI headquarters. They took a look at it. It was a threat to a particular religious center. Because of the relationships that we had developed, I was able to call the head of that particular religious center before I even had any investigators on the ground down in the city. And he responded, and within 2 hours we had it resolved, figured out who had engaged in putting the threat to the FBI, and essentially eliminated that threat immediately just through those communications. And this person was able to help us with the person who had delivered the threat to the FBI's website and helped communicate to him the importance of telling the truth and resolving this without causing any type of public alarm.
Was that person charged?
They have not been charged at this point.
Will they be?
It's still a pending case I can't actually discuss.
And the reason why I ask about those relationships is, as we continue to see Buffalo becoming a new melting pot, many more immigrants and refugees coming into our region, that relationship needs to be building to help protect them as much as knowing where they're coming from.
I think so. Understanding law enforcement around the world becomes very important because our system of justice is different than that in other places of Europe, the Middle East, Africa, Central, South America. So just to develop the comfort level with a lot of these immigrant communities just on how to deal with the police when you get stopped for a traffic stop, let alone approached, you know, by the FBI for information on somebody else in the community. Just understanding that they can do that and not have to worry about paying bribes or some of the other things that might happen in other countries becomes just important just to give them that base level of knowledge on how the U.S. justice system works.
And do you see that even growing more from your end because there are so many coming into our community now? There's just such a high rate.
Yeah, there's no shortage of people calling and requesting that we come out and speak. And we do a lot of coordinating between the FBI and Buffalo Police Department to get out and speak with these communities because the FBI is not normally the first responder to an incident. And just so they can understand how patrol officers, you know, work, how the, you know, who to call, what the police station might look like and what to expect. We do a lot of coordinating with the local police departments to engage those communities.
Agent Botek, when we say you're in charge of the Buffalo Division, how far reaching is that?
My territory covers the 17 counties of western New York. It's actually the same federal judicial circuit that the U.S. attorney has. So I've got an office in Buffalo, Rochester, Jamestown, and Corning. It's one of the smaller of the FBI field divisions. My colleague in Salt Lake City has all of Utah, Montana, and Idaho, and it takes her 18 hours in good weather to drive to her furthest office, where I can drive to Corning and back, you know, in a day.
But still a lot of territory to cover, a lot of rural areas more than city areas, perhaps?
A lot of border. We have a lot of the very busy, high-end border crossings here in our territory. Buffalo, you know, have a couple major international, you know, airports to have to deal with. And although the area is very small geographically, have pretty dense populations in both Rochester and Buffalo, and then a lot of issues that come up with the rural areas as well.
And what about recruiting agents? What is required these days to become an agent in education and training?
What we look for, and when I speak of the FBI's employees, I want to speak of more than just the agents. We have 36,000 employees, only about 12,000 of which are special agents. And for the special agent position, we're always recruiting people with language abilities, law degrees, accounting degrees, and then any other type of experience. Right now, we look for a lot in computer sciences and the physical sciences with what we do with weapons of mass destruction, anthrax, other types of chemical weapons becomes very important. But what we look for is kind of an adherence to core values, and that is having leadership skills, being accountable for their decisions, respect, compassion. Doesn't matter what field you come from, and we look for people that come from diverse backgrounds. If I'm going to assign someone to work undercover in a securities and exchange fraud case, I'm not the person to do that for you. I can't speak the language of the SEC. Same if I'm working, you know, healthcare fraud or mortgage fraud. I'm not the person who would be able to speak to those particular fields. So we look for people with very diverse backgrounds. I had a law enforcement background before I came in, but probably 10% of our agent population is former law enforcement before they come in the FBI.
You certainly have to be willing to move around, too. You can't necessarily stay in your community.
It depends on what career path you take. I've been fortunate enough to move around. My wife and I both moved around in our family situations growing up. But I've been assigned to Washington, D.C., then Quantico, San Francisco, back to Washington, D.C., Oklahoma City, back to Washington, D.C., up here in Buffalo, New York. But some agents get assigned to an office and they enjoy that place and they decide they don't want to leave. And generally speaking, they'll get to stay there. If you take the management track, there's an expectation that you'll do assignments back in Washington, D.C. to get a much broader national and international perspective on the things that we face here locally.
As we wrap up our conversation, what's some of your best advice to our citizens in this community as we move ahead in the cyber world and mobile devices and monitoring and kind of helping one another as our community continues to grow because we are on a rebirth?
I think the most important thing is to realize that cyberspace is really, I say the WWW stands for the Wild Wild West. I mean, it really is an unpleased, uncharted territory out there. And where I can watch, you know, a parakeet, you know, water skiing this afternoon, that doesn't necessarily always mean it's true. And I think people fall victim to looking at things online. I think there was the scam this weekend on Facebook with having to register your lawnmowers here in New York State. And just how viral that goes and how much effort went into having to correct that and tell people that that wasn't going to be the case. So I think, you know, proceeding everywhere online with caution becomes very important now and going to be much more so in the future.
Well, Special Agent in Charge of the Buffalo Division, Brian Botick, thank you so much for the information on your work and what the FBI is doing here in our community. We thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.